Hello and welcome to another episode of Rhythm and Brews. I'm joined today by a returning guest, Pete Landry. Welcome back, Pete.
Hey, glad to be here.
Who are you here to talk about today?
I was going to do Danger Mouse, the producer. Brian Burton is his real name, but everyone kind of knows him as Danger Mouse.
What made you want to do an episode on Danger Mouse?
He's a pretty prolific producer from the last 10 to 20 years now at this point, and one of my favorite producers. A lot of great musicians have worked with him and done a lot of great albums in the last X amount of years, and just really wanted to kind of highlight that and kind of show off his career. And I kind of not that it'll be like pervasive through the whole podcast, but there's he's an interesting guy to kind of connect the dots from who he works with and who they go on to work with, and like very interconnected the kind of group that he works with.
Kind of a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon kind of thing.
Sure. Yep.
All right, well, you've put a playlist together for us that we'll get into in a minute, but we always start with our BYOB segment. So what are you drinking and why?
I brought this beer called Solar Plexus from Tap Brewing Company. It's a double India pale ale. I brought Solar Plexus because one of the songs that I have today is called Benzy Box, and it's by MF Doom. And one of the best lines in it, he raps and is able to rhyme Solar Plexus with something else. And
nice.
It's amazing. So I, you know, wanted to play tribute to that.
That's an awesome tie-in. The one I'm drinking, I had a hard time pairing for this, but I picked what's called Ms. Scarlet 2018 edition. It's an IPA mixed with basically a Bloody Mary.
Oh,
so
geez.
IPA with tomato, celery, chili, and black pepper. And the reason I did that is I know he's collaborated with the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and
yep.
I thought, yeah, you can maybe tomato, chili, and pepper. All right, that kind of gets me there. And then also, I thought the pairing of IPA and Bloody Mary is a weird combination, kind of in tribute of the second Gnarls Barkley album,
sure.
Odd Couple. So yeah, let's crack these open and we'll get into your playlist.
Sounds good.
I think before we actually get into the music, you had kind of a caveat you wanted to share.
Yeah, that's right. Having only 7 songs to pick from to make this playlist, I wanted to make sure I covered a good variety of the tracks that would represent his career. But there's a few tracks or albums and bands that kind of get omitted doing that because they kind of take over. And a few of those that I wanted to just represent right now are, there's no Gray album on here, which is kind of, you'd think that there would be a song from the Gray album, as it was kind of his breakout album that kind of gave him his fame. That was the album that he mashed together between the white album that the Beatles did and the black album from Jay-Z.
Yep.
It's very iconic and it's really good. And listening to it, you can understand how he went on to be who he is today or whatever, but none of the tracks are on Spotify for the most part, and on top of that, it's kind of just not something that's, you know, worth going too deep on.
And as I understand it, it was like completely unlicensed and he
sure.
just like did it, and it was mostly for his friends, but it got leaked, like that
right.
was kind of the, so not, I guess not really official, unofficial release, and that's evidenced by the fact that it's not on Spotify.
Right, exactly.
Much.
It's on YouTube. It's worth checking out. And when I go into some of the other tracks, I'll kind of mention it because it's a huge part of who he is and kind of represents his hip-hop side a bit, whatever, which doesn't overly get represented on this playlist just because he hasn't done a lot of hip-hop lately. He still does it a lot, and you can tell the hip-hop influence, but he works way more with rock bands and in the rock genre. And then the other one kind of to that level is there's no Black Keys on this record, on this list. And he's done 4 records with them. He's kind of prolific with them and kind of helped shape their sound. And it's one of those things that not a lot of people outside, when they think of the Black Keys, they think of Danger Mouse, which is what it is or whatever. But you could really like pick up 7 songs from the Black Keys and do an entire playlist of that or whatever.
And to a certain degree, if you did a Black Keys episode, he's kind of baked into that.
Oh, for sure. There's probably like 1 or 2 tracks that you do from their early years, but then the minute that he jumped in, it's kind of the rest of their career.
Yeah.
And they're producing albums on their own now. They kind of been influenced by him as a producer. And on top of that, strangely, and I'm sure there are people who are music experts who could like argue the other way, but listening to his other stuff, you almost don't hear any of the Black Keys influence on his other production at all.
Yeah. All right. Well, should we get into the first song?
Let's do it.
What are we starting off with?
This is Dare by the Gorillaz from the album Demon Days in 2005.
I never really fully got into the Gorillaz. At least not. I always like the, you know, the hits,
mm-hmm.
but never listened to their albums all the way through.
Sure. I kind of picked a hit for this one just to start it out with one of his more famous songs and one of the more famous Gorillaz songs.
Yep.
Huge dance hit when it was out. Their first album, just the Gorillaz self-titled, was produced by Dan the Automator, who is a very famous hip-hop producer from the underground kind of scene. And Danger Mouse says often in interviews that there was no person that he kind of could pull from for his own career. But I think that that's kind of one of those things where you can look at the person who produced this Gorillaz album right before this and kind of hear a similar kind of style. Danger Mouse's style when he comes to producing is the albums end up kind of feeling like a movie or feeling like its own universe. Very self-contained and kind of separate from our reality or whatever. And if you listen to a lot of Dan the Automator's stuff, like the first Gorillaz album or his Handsome Boy Modeling School or Deltron 3030, I don't know if you know that.
No.
They're all awesome, great records. They all kind of have a very similar, you're putting on an album, but you're also opening a portal to another dimension type thing that they all kind of feel contained on themselves or whatever.
I read a quote from him that was saying, he can't, there's no real comparison
yes.
to what he wants to do in music. So he thinks of himself as a director, like a
totally.
Film director. And I think that that's a perfect encapsulation of that, that you're world building with music in a way that like other people aren't necessarily aspiring to.
I 100% agree. It's also, I sometimes think of him as an architect, where he's kind of building like a building or whatever and kind of like designing the structure that the album's going to have to it as well. And that's one of those things where before this and the Gray album, he was basically producing just regular hip hop stuff. And then the Gray album came out and Damon Albarn heard that and was like, I'm going to take a chance on this guy, and had him produce the second Gorillaz album, which was amazing. They kind of learned a lot from each other doing it. And the first Gorillaz album has Clint Eastwood, great song, a couple other good hits on it, but this album kind of took them to the next level, kind of whatever. This is one of those albums that you could just own in your collection and no one would be like, no one would question if you're a Gorillaz fan or just a good music fan or anything.
Yeah.
It's just a classic at this point. But yeah, this also is kind of where he started to like perfect his own unique kind of sound and whatever. One of the things, I didn't put Feel Good Inc. on here, but I'm going to reference it a lot later in the playlist. He does a lot of stuff that kind of sounds retro 60s or acoustic guitar playing by itself, where you can hear the fingers picking on the actual strings. He does a
very analog type vibe. And some of that does come through on Black Keys.
Oh, agreed.
And I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No. One thing that's going on right now in this track, you can hear the kind of like high. He loves to do these high kind of harmonies or like melodies that play in the background with his stuff, and that'll come up
that,
a lot.
That like synth counter melody that's happening.
You could really go into a whole Gorillaz album, and I could probably
do that
so
as subtle.
Well.
Yeah.
I know, it's awesome. I could spend a lot of time going into the history of the actual song itself from the Gorillaz point of view, but we're kind of doing a Danger Mouse one, so I'm not really worrying too much about.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But like the history there is Sean Ryder's the guy doing the, you've got to face yourself, you know, whatever, yelling. And he's known for, he's known for being in Happy Mondays, which was like a British band, whatever, in the early 90s. And he kind of took a shining to Damon Albarn and from the Gorillaz, who was also in Blur, and kind of sympathized with him when Oasis was picking on him in like the mid 90s and stuff, and this was kind of a tribute to bring him back in.
What's the next one on the list?
Yeah, the next one is called Benzie Box. It's from a band that he formed, or a group that he formed with himself and MF Doom, the hip-hop artist, called Danger Doom. And the album's called The Mouse and the Mask, because he's the mouse, and the mask, MF Doom wears a Dr. Doom mask when he raps. And this album came out in 2005. They worked on it for like 2 or 3 years, and they were recruited by Adult Swim to do an entire album that kind of is in reference to the Adult Swim genre of Cartoon Network, the late night kind of whatever vibe. And all the songs have tons of references to different Adult Swim things. There's different characters who have sound bites or like come in and rap bits and stuff. It's so awesome.
It's so weird how into hip hop Adult Swim is, and how
seriously. Yeah. And this also, you have to think, this was like mid 2000s Adult Swim, which is totally different.
That's
now.
True.
It's not like
it's not Rick and Morty.
Oh yeah, it's not that anymore. It's this was Aqua Teen Hunger Force, Brack. C-Lab 2021, all that kind of weird stuff that pulled from the 60s, but like made it very modern, which is a huge thing for Danger Mouse. Like all of the beats kind of that he does and production that he does is like 60s, but larger than life. Super weird. And this is this song specifically singing right now. This is CeeLo Green, who he went on to work with in Gnarls Barkley. There's not going to be a Gnarls Barkley song on the playlist because I wanted to tie so many different things. But before he was doing this, he lived in Georgia. Rap these days is a pain up in the neck. He used to live in Georgia, and he was obsessed with the Goody Mob, which was kind of like a big kind of Wu-Tang style rap group of all these different hip hop people. And CeeLo Goody was in that group at the time before he became CeeLo Green. All that kerosene ain't cheap. The flow MF Doom has is so good. They were so good to work together. They did one song together on the Gorillaz album, and then they went on to do this full thing together. Such a cool vibe. Such a, him them building a universe kind of thing or whatever, and just a great example of them working towards, like, he ended up working with Gnarls Barkley after this, and like because of this, there's like leading in,
like you were saying before, like how you can kind of chart his path.
Exactly. And looking back, you see a lot of cool stuff happening because he decides to work with certain people at certain times. He entered a contest when he was young to like work with Goody Mob, and he lost, got second place, and he just emailed or like messaged Goody Mob and was like, listen to this shit, just like try to work with me. So cool. But yeah, so this album's weird as hell. Early him, this is probably one of the only hip-hop representations on the playlist, but a great representation. MF Doom doesn't get enough rep in the world, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I gotta say, I don't have any exposure to him, but that was awesome.
Yeah, I recommend it. There's a lot of cool other like collabs on it, like Talib Kweli's on a track. They do a lot of good stuff together.
And that had that solar plexus line.
Yeah, exactly. Here. Yeah, he wraps it with a Rolodexus. It's so cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that takes us to Nature Springs, I think?
Yes. This came out in 2007, leading in with the, you can hear the guitar picking.
Yeah.
So awesome. And you can hear him like moving up and down the string. Hitting all, just awesome. It's the guitar player from The Verve, Bittersweet Symphony guy. Yep. The name of the band is The Good, The Bad, and The Queen. It's the name of the album at first. They didn't have a name for a band. They just released an album called The Good, The Bad, and The Queen and just didn't worry about it. You can tell it's Damon Albarn from The Gorillaz. They had a bunch of stuff that they didn't... He had a bunch of tracks that were just sitting around that he had had collected over years. And he made a super group again with him, Tony Allen, who is this drummer from Africa who does Afrobeat, kind of very intricate drumming. Like whatever kind of stuff, and the guitar player from The Verve, who also did Feel Good Inc. and a lot of stuff on The Gorillaz.
I was gonna say that the opening riff sounds
very similar.
Yeah,
I love this arrow. That's so cool. And then the bass player is Paul Simonon from The Clash.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So I was instantly obsessed. If anyone probably didn't listen or whatever, but I was on recently doing or a while ago doing a Clash episode or whatever. I'm obsessed with The Clash, and getting Paul Simonon to play bass again for the first time in probably 17 years to do this album, after doing nothing for most of the 90s or whatever. It was the first time that he worked with Paul Simonon, and Paul Simonon after this loved it so much that he went to Mick Jones of The Clash and was like, we gotta do something again. And they all went on to do the next Gorillaz album. So like the whole rhythm section for the Gorillaz on their next tour for Plastic Beach was just the rhythm section for The Clash.
That's so cool.
It was awesome. This is one of the more intimate Damon Albarn albums. It has more of his like designing kind of Danger Mouse designing kind of these soundscapes. It feels very quintessential British, and like small country roads at night, kind of just like just writing songs for the first time and almost feeling like you're recording them for the first time too, even though they've had them for years. These amazing strings is a very Danger Mouse kind of vibe. And then this whistle, like he's just bringing in these all these kind of cartoony senses of different sounds from different musics that like don't kind of make sense together, but come together in this weird woven way that just feels unique.
So many ingredients that don't seem like they would go together, yeah. Almost like celery, tomato, and
tying it back.
IPA.
But that's a great, you know, it's a very great example of how he does pull in all these unique sounds and makes them work. And kind of at this point is perfecting his sound. Like this is a Danger Mouse type of vibe that has this weird architecture in it. Another great album, worth checking out. He didn't do the second album and it kind of suffers from it. It's kind of it's more Damon Albarn after he did these two albums with Danger Mouse, didn't really work with him after that. And he pulls a lot from the Danger Mouse sound. And maybe like part of that is because he helped develop it. But at the same time, him by himself, you can kind of tell that like Gorillaz albums after that were good, but didn't have that same joie de vivre or whatever.
Yeah.
Know? Same with The Good, the Bad, and the Queen.
So what's the next song on the playlist?
The next song on the playlist is called Insane Lullaby. It's from 2010, and it features James Mercer from The Shins doing the vocals. It's on an album called Dark Night of the Soul. It was a collab that he did between himself, Sparkle Horse, who's a DJ alternative indie artist person, and David Lynch, the director.
Oh, interesting.
They wrote this album to accompany a David Lynch book of like 100 images that would kind of tell a story together, and David Lynch did a couple like songs on the record too. And on top of that...
Like written and recorded?
Yes.
Weird.
Super weird. And he's singing like he talks, and it's super crazy. But then also, every other track on the record has a different indie singer from a different album, like the guy from The Strokes, it has the guy from The Flaming Lips, it has the guy from The Pixies. They each have a different song that they do on this album with him. And midway through making it, or right after making it, Sparkle Horse shot himself in the heart with a gun and committed suicide.
Jesus.
Very sad, and you can kind of hear it a lot in like the kind of bleak Dark Night of the Soul is the name of the album title kind of vibe that it gives off. It's from 2010, and within the next year or so, Broken Bells came out, which was his collaboration with the guy from The Shins, this guy singing right now. And it's just another amazing example of just like him finding someone on a project and then being able to pull albums worth of material out of the guy, just that has its own sound. Totally worth being its own thing that's not The Shins, kind of, you know. Album's amazing. I could have literally picked any song off this album, and Julian Casablanca from The Strokes has one that has that pushes Julian Casablanca's singing ability to pass what The Strokes have ever done, and it's just amazing. I really love this album. More strings. The whole thing has a very unique vibe to it.
I love the kind of consistent theme of him like finding an artist that pulls something new out of him and like gives him inspiration for for new music. There's something so cool about that. And I think you could probably relate to that as a musician yourself,
totally.
Right? Like the people you've worked with and collaborated with musically over the years, they like bring something to the table that you didn't.
And as a film fan too. I mean, like you as well, probably. It's like, and he, like we mentioned and you brought up, him as a director. It's kind of like Scorsese finding Leo and doing three movies with Leo together and just realizing that, oh my God, I work with Leo so well. Or Tarantino realizing, oh my God, I work with Kurt Russell so well. Things like that, that like they just want to pull from those artists over and over again that they just really love. Not that I'm comparing James Mercer to Kurt Russell at all, but maybe. But yeah, this album's really good. Doesn't get a lot of attention in the grand scheme of things just because it's such a weird... I love the bells. I don't know.
How much songwriting does he do?
He... it's interesting. Sometimes he comes in and will write songs with the bands. I'll bring that up a little bit later or whatever, but sometimes they come in with fully formed stuff and just like he'll come in and add a soundscape over it.
Yeah,
it really depends, but he's definitely one of those people who loves to get nitty gritty. He plays a lot of musical instruments too, so he'll kind of come in and like work out the songs with them on piano. And you can kind of hear that. He's one of those guys that, and I have a couple examples later on that kind of go against this, but he's one of those people that when he works with an artist, you can tell they're doing a Danger Mouse album because he kind of takes over their sound a bit. A really great example of that is he did Modern Guilt with Beck, and it sounds like a Beck album, but it has all these kind of like bum, 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 60s vibe things and weird kind of string instruments pulling in, and it's very Beck, but it's also very Danger Mouse or whatever. But then there are some times where he works with an artist, and you brought up the Chili Peppers, that's a great example, and I have a U2 song on here later on, and Adele's another example where you couldn't tell that they were working with Danger Mouse at all. Just like people just come in and kind of overpower him and can kind of take over his sound too. We'll get to that.
And so next up is Awake.
Yeah. This is by Electric Guest. It came out in 2012. The album's called Mondo. Backstory there is Electric Guest was this two-person group. The lead singer, randomly, is the younger brother of one of the Lonely Island guys or whatever.
Oh, weird.
But they rented a room in some musician-shared house, and the room they rented previously was his room, Danger Mouse. And they had all these songs pretty much worked out, and he was like, they're good, but let's try to redefine your sound and refine your sound. And they rewrote these songs over 2 years with him and then put the album out that you're listening to, whatever, you know.
Interesting.
He went on to produce the latest Portugal the Man album, and you can hear that so heavily in this that they kind of have the same vibe. Same with the Broken Bells stuff a lot. This is kind of like he moved from being the Gorillaz hip-hop weirdo cartoony world stuff into more leaning into the 60s.
Yeah, for sure.
Super catchy. Same vibe, kind of. Still going for a vibe, but almost maturing into something that works more with the rock side of him or whatever. You can totally tell that he's going to move on to doing the Portugal the Man stuff and worked with Broken Bells beforehand. More of this kind of heavy, funky bass. But there's less of the high harmonies or whatever. It's more in the vocals, I guess.
Yeah. It's less maximalist. It's very, like, stripped down.
Yep.
I feel like it's rare that you're only hearing, what, three instruments right now for him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think like the tambourine comes in the chorus, that kind of gives it the 60s vibe a little bit. You can hear a lot of Beck in there from him working with Beck. This is more kind of him pivoting, I would say, into a different, more mature point in his career. This album, once again, it's also weird that he does stuff with Gorillaz and all these other big bands, and then he just finds this band. Sure, they have some connections within the music industry, and they're kind of, that's networking their way into this, but he's picking these bands that no one's ever heard of.
Yeah.
And just like, hey, I want to like spend the next 2 years before we even record to change you and to work with you to make sure that you get to this point.
I feel like it's so common for musicians to be egomaniacs.
Yep.
And so that you, to have an openness to somebody being like, let's take it all apart and put it back together, and to have it work.
Sure.
That's a rare type of humility to have.
And like, this is only, what is this, 2012? So this is 7 years into his career. I mean, like, sure, 7 years is pretty long at this point, especially when you start your career with a Gorillaz album that's a huge hit. But also, this is a guy that, you know, is doing some great stuff. And if someone could like that comes up to me and is like, hey, you're, because I was in a band, you know, and if someone at that level is like, I like what you're doing, but I want you to completely change, I would at least give it a shot.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah. If you thought you were
something
talking to
like
somebody
this.
Who knew what they were talking about. And
I remember when this came out, I was like, this is just such a huge Broken Bells ripoff that it's just like him retreading kind of the same sound. But at this point, I think this is a better album than anything he did with the Broken Bells. Less piano focused, but more kind of rock and like, I don't know, frontman kind of stuff. Just because there's only two of them.
Does he contribute vocals on...
Almost never. Much,
really?
I don't think I've ever heard him actually sing something. Maybe like he sings along with the Gnarls Barkley stuff, but maybe not mic'd or something. Maybe.
So where does that take us in the playlist?
A touchy one. So this is Every Breaking Wave by U2 off of the last U2 album, I think. I don't follow U2 enough to know, but I think it's called Songs of Innocence.
The one that they pre-installed on everyone's iPhone.
Yes. Which is, this album's pretty good. And part of that might be because, A, I'm a slight U2 fan, and so there's a slight bias there. But mostly for the early stuff.
Same.
And then on top of that, I think Danger Mouse did some decent stuff with them on this. And
so this is, you would say this is an example of him working with an artist, like a huge artist that doesn't overpower him, where you can still kind of see his influence?
A little bit. Like you can kind of, when it started, you could hear the guitar picking stuff a little bit. Some of the other songs on this try some stuff that like U2's never done. There are some weird things every so often. When this song ends, like the kind of the bridge outro whatever on this, whatever, there is some weird static effect that goes on every, like I think third beat. That is so much like the Dark Knight of the Soul stuff. But at the same time, if you didn't know that this was Danger Mouse doing it, you would just assume this is the next U2 album.
Yeah, I was shocked to see this on your list.
For sure.
And that's just such a, that's a combination I would never conceive of. Oh. Danger Mouse and U2.
Same with Chili Peppers, in my opinion. Yeah. I thought that was kind of something where I was like, really? And Adele, I think, kind of has a cool vibe to it, but at the same time...
She's kind of retro in a similar way, so I guess that could work. But
you lose the retro with him on that stuff. You almost... It, like, it's her version of the retro as opposed to his weirdo retro coming through an old-timey speaker kind of vibe that you get from a lot of his other stuff. This was supposed to be part of a, this was part one of an album that was, he was going to do with David Guetta on the, that was going to be way dancier, but never materialized. The weird thing also about this album that I think kind of takes away from the Danger Mouse side of it is he worked with them to develop the songs. And then after they developed the songs, the band was like, these aren't song enough. So they took all of the work that they did and they went into a bunch of hitmaker producers and refined them into catchier pop songs, like this guy named Flood, who they work with all the time on a bunch of stuff. And then they came back with the more concrete songs and had him then produce those songs.
Okay.
So he did the beginning, then they left him, and then they came back at the end to do some stuff. It's got a cool vibe. I love the weird thing that he does with the dog on the street. Like weird stuff that Bono does there that they kind of push him out of his comfort zone. But still, it sounds like his typical, you know, anthematic kind of... This is the song that if people had lighters at concerts still, they would just be, you know, rocking out with.
Yeah.
This is the weird breakdown that has this weird static effect on it. Like...
U2's just one of those bands where, like, it is not cool to like them.
No, not at all, which is a shame.
Especially
because,
later U2 albums. Especially this album, because it's like, how dare you put this on my iPhone?
The giant corporate overlords just shoving their corporate rock band right down your, like, corporate throat, basically. It is now.
Our throats are both pretty corporate at this point.
Yeah, I agree. But early U2 just raging against the injustice of Ireland and stuff like that, just trying to get out of their poverty, be in the Clash, be in these punk bands, getting into the dance scene, not knowing who their parents were, just hard lives, and then trying to stay relevant and writing all this stuff. They're one of those bands that I give a lot of respect to for just staying above water for years and years, and like over 40 years at this point.
Yeah. And this is good.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
objectively, this, I mean, it's safe, it's kind of boring, but it's not bad. This is on, this is decent, you know. I'm not embarrassed to have this on at my market basket as I'm shopping, basically, is how I'm okay with this.
Yeah, I think that's the measure of a good U2 song. It's at like, do I mind if it's on while I'm shopping?
Yes, exactly. And so at that point, that was 2014. I want to call out that maybe if you had to give him a like in the wilderness period where he wasn't doing stuff that was up to Danger Mouse standard, it was like him, and it's up through now even with The Getaway, that terrible Chili Peppers album that just came out.
I haven't heard it.
I've only heard maybe one or two songs, and then I just keep going, ugh, no. And like,
how recent was it?
I want to say it was in the last 2 to 3 years.
Okay. So I maybe heard a song of it off the radio or something.
Maybe, but I feel like typically, even when Chili Peppers were at like their most peak annoying, there were four or five songs that they would just shove down your throat again with like singles worthy, you know, whatever. But
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they're just past their relevancy point or whatever.
Past their expiration date.
Yeah, whatever. Once again, I'm a huge John Frusciante fan, so I could talk about the Chili Peppers for far too long.
And we will get to that point. Yes. Yeah.
Or we'll talk about it every time and then never do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is also entertaining. But no, the last song I want to go over is called Ministry.
Okay.
It's from 2019. It came out this year, and it's an album that he did together with Karen O from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, or just Karen O at this point. She's, you know, earned
her
spot.
Doing her own thing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, everyone should know her. You know, she's a great musician. A lot of stuff like that U2 album, he produced it. This, he actually is one of the musicians on it or whatever. It's him and Karen O are equal billing on it. It has a huge vibe of, he did an album a couple of years before this called Rome that he did with Norah Jones and Jack White. And it's almost like a soundtrack for the city of Rome, basically. He got all of Ennio Morricone's old musicians from like all the spaghetti westerns back to do this amazingly beautiful, lush album. Have you heard it or anything like
that? I've
heard
songs off of it, yeah.
It's good. And this kind of pulls a lot of the similar soundscapes from that, where it has these sleepy, foreign country... The guitar picking, like if I were to start over again, I could just sing windmill from the
This belongs in a Tarantino movie.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, for sure. There should be someone on a horse driving out into the west, just, you know, thinking about killing someone. The one cool thing about this, Danger Mouse produced that album with Daniel Lupi, the one, the Norah Jones Jack White one or whatever his name's, Daniel Lupe or Lupi, I'm not really 100% sure how to pronounce it. Then that guy went on to do this album called Milano that he did with Karen O and the Parquet Courts, who are like an indie kind of rock band from Brooklyn, which is also where the Yeah Yeah Yeahs are from, tying it back, just making that connection right now. And that album sounds so much like this kind of stuff. And that Rome album, you can very, I always thought it was a Danger Mouse album. And when I was going to put this playlist together, I was like, oh, no shit. And so after that album, he went on to do the latest Parquet Court album with Danger Mouse. That Parquet Court album was produced by Danger Mouse. And then a year or so later, he put this one out with Karen O, just like pre-collaborating towards this other collaboration. I don't know who recommended who, but it just goes back to that whole, just let's mix all these weird sounds. And this album works amazingly. I think this is a great album. One of the biggest cool surprises. I didn't know it was coming out this year, so just hearing this on the radio and just pleasantly surprised.
So this is pretty brand new.
Yes. Yep. I would say like 2 to 3 months ago, maybe tops. I think it might be the last thing he produced, but he produces so much stuff. And a lot of it at this point, he has those Chili Pepper type moments where you're not sure that he did it, that he might've produced something that I didn't know at this, you know?
Yeah, sure.
There's a cool, like, that trumpet right there. Just echoey kind of. But yeah, very Ennio Morricone kind of spaghetti western. Just also showing that he's kind of matured into a third wave. Like, this doesn't sound like anything from the Electric Guest era or like the Portugal the Man era. You wouldn't believe this is the same guy doing Gorillaz, know, for the most part, or that Benzie Box kind of Danger Doom stuff.
To me, it's almost like a less poppy... It's like if Dido did a spaghetti western song.
Yeah, kind of. I can hear that. Very sleepy, but very kind of sleepy in a way that it feels like it's covered in a dust. It's not just slow and sluggish. It feels kind of in an old movie or something like that. And it also kind of like, this is the most recent thing that he's done. He's still going strong, I feel like. It's been 15 years since he put out the Gorillaz stuff. And he's still kind of coming up with crazy, you know, interesting stuff.
And you can see strains of all of it.
Yes.
You know, that sound like him, mm-hmm. as disparate as the projects are.
I almost put, there's one of his songs off of that Gorillaz album, El Mañana. I kind of had to take it off the list because it sounded too much like this. Like, had the same kind of vibe or whatever. And I wanted to show a contrast in his styles, you know, just to give him more representation. Love this guitar solo with the...
That's almost a Black Keys guitar
solo.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I always... Sometimes their guitar sound like kazoos to me.
That's all I'm going to hear now.
I know.
You've ruined the Black Keys a little further for me. I mean, their saturation on like indie music has ruined them completely for me, but yes. Oh, but that guitar is so cool. It very much sounds like the stuff he was doing on The Good, the Bad, and the Queen.
You said you had a like some honorable mentions that are what, like YouTube songs or whatever?
Oh, no.
I misheard.
No, we could listen to... I mean, I could go on for days of other stuff, but like we could listen to a couple of Gray album tracks just to hear like how smart he was putting together weird beats and finding ways to make John Lennon's vocal harmonies into like these weird rhythms and stuff.
Maybe I'll do one of those for the outro track on the episode.
Yeah. Once we get off or whatever, I'll try to like figure out a good one for that.
Cool. Well, then do you have any other thoughts on Danger Mouse before we jump into... this episode's drinking game?
Ooh. Just recommend checking him out, doing research into what he's into, but also just, I hope he just continues to, you know, stay interesting, keep reinventing himself, that kind of stuff. Just, you know, general nerdy fan, you know, optimism for the future.
All right. Well, so our drinking game today is kind of in honor of his, work with, you know, doing a spaghetti western album. It's called The Good, the Bad, or the Ugly. So I'm gonna give you a series of hints that describe a person, place, or thing that has either the word good, bad, or ugly in it, and for each of them you just have to answer good, bad, or ugly. You got it? So for example, if I said a fast food themed comedy starring Keenan and Kel.
Good.
Right. Burger. For good burger. Yes. Yeah. Okay. You ready?
Yep.
So, and as usual, if you get it right, I'll take a drink. Sure. If you get it wrong, you'll take a drink.
How is your crazy beer?
It is surprisingly good. I thought I was really afraid to drink a Bloody Mary IPA, but the IPA is much more prominent than anything else good going on in there. And even, I don't know if you can see kind of the coloration of it. Mm-hmm. It is very red, but it almost looks more like a fruity red, like a raspberry than a tomato. I don't frankly get any kind of savory notes from it. If I was guessing, I would say it's an IPA with some sweetness from a fruit, and maybe it's just the sweetness of the tomato coming through.
Sure, a fruit.
That's true.
You're learning something today. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry. Cut that out, please.
What if I was like, what?
Yeah, I know.
A tomato is a fruit? All right. Here's your first one.
Yep.
2009 romantic comedy starring Katherine Heigl and Gerard Butler.
I want to say ugly.
You're right. It's The Ugly Truth.
Yes.
I'll take a drink.
I've never seen it.
Acoustic song by the punk band Green Day.
Good.
That's right.
Good riddance. Not to Green Day.
Sitcom about an unstylish woman who lands a job at a fashion magazine starring America Ferrera.
Ugly.
Correct. That is from a show called Ugly Betty.
I only know that because it was on the same time Lost was on.
Nice. There are a few softballs on here. I'll give you a heads up. Michael Bay action comedy starring Martin Lawrence and Will Smith.
Oh, bad.
That's right. Rock band formed in 1977 whose music has been described as hardcore punk, alternative rock, and reggae.
I'm going to go bad?
Correct. Bad Brains.
Oh, okay. I'm going to take a sip because I didn't know that. Just guess. Not on a sip.
British actor who played Ozymandias in The Watchmen.
Good.
That's right.
Matthew Good. Have you seen any of the stuff for the new Watchmen?
I've seen a couple like the teaser stuff for HBO, but Yeah, I'm excited for it. I'm pumped that they're like treating it as more of a sequel than a rehash,
not just a retread of the same story over and over.
Just a few left.
Okay.
2007 romantic comedy film starring Dane Cook.
Ugly.
Good. Oh, actually, no. It's Good Luck Chuck.
Did not see that.
Yeah, fair enough. Comedy film starring Jonah Hill and Michael Cera.
Bad.
Yeah.
Super bad.
Okay, probably the most famous primatologist / anthropologist.
Good.
Yep.
Jane Goodall?
That's right.
Yes. Yeah.
The story of a bullied bird who eventually turns out to be a swan.
Ugly.
Yep. The antagonist in The Little Red Riding Hood.
Bad.
That's right. Yeah.
That one took way too long.
Big Bad Wolf.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, what does antagonist mean?
1997 romantic comedy film starring Jack Nicholson.
Good.
Yep.
As good as it gets. Greg Kinnear and Helen Hunt?
That's right. Yes. Yep. And lastly, 2000 American romantic musical comedy drama film.
Jesus.
Featuring the song Can't Fight the Moonlight.
I'm going to let you tell me what it is while I take a sip.
Coyote Ugly.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that. Forgot about that.
And that is our drinking game. I think you kicked my ass on that. I think you only missed one or two. So, sure. Good job. No prize for you today.
Sure, that's fine.
You know,
hey, we don't always
win. I'm not really in a position where I can be giving out cash prizes on this show.
No.
Any last words on, how's your beer, by the way?
Oh, it's great. It's a little hoppy. I'm not a huge hop fan, but,
yes.
If I can get through a hoppy beer, I consider that a pretty good beer.
Yeah, right on. I usually like double IPAs more than regular IPAs.
Really?
And in my experience, I don't know why, but I find them to be a little bit more balanced flavor wise than a regular IPA.
Interesting.
I feel like a ton of IPA, maybe it's just like saturation. Like,
sure.
There's so many breweries out there making just an IPA, and they're trying to make their mark by making it as hoppy as they possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas a double IPA, you're trying to make something that is maybe a little bit unique. There are not as many double IPAs as there are IPAs. And anyway, so generally speaking, when I have a double IPA, I find it much more, much less one note than a normal IPA. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So any other thoughts on Danger Mouse before we close out?
Nope. Look him up. Check out his discography. Give yourself some time with all of them. You'll do you good. That's all I got to say.
All right. Well, then for everybody tuning in, here's to you.
Never been a nigga this good for this long, this hood, for this pop, this hot, for this strong, with so many different flows. This one's for this song, the next one I switch up, this one will give it up. These fucks too lazy to make up shit, they crazy, they don't paint pictures, they just trace me. You know what, soon they forget where they pluck, they hold down from them, try to reverse the outcome. I'm like, tough, I'm not a writer, I'm a writer for myself and others. I say a big verse, I'm only big enough my brother, big enough my barrel, I'm big enough to do it, I'm that barrel, plus I know my own flow is foolish. So the rings and things you sing about, bring them out. It's hard to yell when the bat rails in your mouth. I'm in new sneakers, dual seaters, few divas. What more can I tell you? Let me spell it for you. W-I-L-L-I-E.